Well, thank you for having me. Just a little bit more about it, besides the fact that I love to crash kids' birthday parties. I have four children. They are all teenagers, and this is a happy thing in my home. So for those of you with littles, teenagers are fabulous. They're just different challenges, but they're fabulous. I have one off at college, a high school senior, a high school freshman, and an eighth grader, two girls and then two boys. Back to back, two girls. The bedrooms worked out well in my house. People act like I planned that. I did, and that was God. And then we became foster parents a couple years ago. So the birthday party was actually, my foster child was there. We thought we were going to get teenagers, and we've had two preschoolers. So I'm like repeating again. So I do have experience for this age group all over again. And you do kind of like falling off riding a bike. You do kind of remember things, but there's a lot of things I'm like, oh, right. I really, yeah. Okay. So it's been a learning experience for me as well. So I'm so grateful to be here today. I'm going to talk about raising a self-reliant and responsible child. How many, does that sound good? Do you want to raise, yeah. And with teenagers, I can see the fruits of my labors when they were young. Because my teenagers are fairly responsible. Mostly responsible. And fairly and mostly is really all you can hope for with kids. Because you can't expect them to do it right all the time. What you want is most of the time. And then you want them to realize when they missed, they can try again and do it again better next time. So the principles I'm going to talk about today are the ones that I have tried out in my own home and had fair success. I will have one caveat to say. I cannot guarantee that if you follow these principles, that your child will be responsible and self-reliant, because they are not animals and there are no guarantees. But I can guarantee that you will feel more confident as a mom, and you will give them the tools they need to be self-reliant and responsible. Some of them may bloom later. They may be young adults before they really kind of start to get these principles right. And some of them may, you might find that you have really wonderful teenagers. So let's get started. I'm going to start with seasons of parenting, because I find when we can think about parenting as seasonal, it can really help us get through the hard times. Because parenting is hard and it's tiring. I mean, I get tired with our 4-year-old. I'm like, oh, right, he like runs all the time. I can't take my eyes off of him because I do not know what he's going to do. So I've forgotten how tiring it can be. But here are the four seasons. Season one is season of service. This is from birth to age two. And you can probably guess why that's the season of service. You're serving the child because the child literally cannot change their own diaper. They cannot feed themselves. You have to do it for them. So that's the season of service. And when the child is between two and three, it's something that a mom needs to do. And I talk about this to moms, because dads are usually not involved in the day-to-day like we are, right? Most of us are doing all the day-to-day things. We are serving more than our husbands, even if they're an involved father. And they really don't have a problem making this transition as we do. But between two and three, you have to move the child from being the center of your home of necessity, because otherwise the child could die if you don't feed them, change their diaper, remove them from dangerous situations where they don't know that that plug should not be touched, right? You have to do that. But between two and three, most children, the ones that are neurotypical, I will say, having had two autistic kids in my home as fosters, I know that you have to, you know, take into account their abilities. They need to be moved from the center of your home to the periphery of your home. And by that I mean they were the center of attention and that was right. But then they need to start moving out of that center. And who goes in that center? Mom and dad. The parents should be the center of the home. So when you make that transition, when you start removing yourself, this means that your 2-year-old can go get his shoes for you to put them on. This means that you, instead of doing everything for them, you start letting them do some things for themselves that they are capable of doing. And that kind of helps them say, oh, mom's not here to serve me 24/7. What? Of course he's not going to like that, or she's not going to like that. But that's how you gradually do that. And we're going to talk about some ways to help them make that transition. Season two is a season of leadership and authority. And this is not to say that you're going to be authoritarian in a bad way with your kids, but kids need leaders. If you're not leading in your home, I guarantee your kids are going to fill that gap. They are going to take charge if you're not in charge. So the season of leadership is when you transform your little criminal, because let's be honest, kids, they don't know how to do the right thing until you teach them, into a successfully discipled child. And we talk about discipling a lot at church, but what we don't talk about is in the family. I want to disciple my children. I want them to know what I believe. I want them to know why I believe it. I want to know what our family believes, and I want them to follow that. That's what we want with our kids. I don't want them to grow up and have no connection with who I am, who my husband is, why we believe what we believe. And the successfully discipled child are ones who look up to you. They want your advice. They want you to be around you. And they look for use on cues on how to live your life, how to follow. And that's what I want to train my children so that they have that. And they want to subscribe to what I believe. I don't want them just to believe it because I believe it. I want them to believe it because I've shown them why I believe it, and so they get that for themselves. So that's the season of leadership and authority. And most of you, that's where you're at. That's where your kids are. This is between 3 and 13. And this is a great time. You're training your children. You're showing them what you want them to believe. And at 13, that magical teenage year, you start moving them toward mentoring and emancipation, because we want the kids out of our house eventually, living on their own, having a good life, and giving us grandkids that we can spoil and give back to them. I mean, this is really our goal. We want them to be successful. Many of the problems of older teens and college kids is because we failed to properly mentor them in season three. Sometimes your kids hit teenage years, and I was just talking to a mom who had kids in her teenage years, and she's like, I suddenly started thinking all the things I didn't teach them. And I was thinking, I've got to do catch up. And then I realized, no, I need to take a breath and let them. They learned more than I thought they learned. But you can't treat a 13-year-old like you do a 3-year-old. And you can't micromanage them and follow them around. And do you start moving to that mentoring? You let them make choices. And that's hard. Speaking of a mom of 4 teenagers, it's hard to go, okay, you're going to take that class. Okay. And all right. It's uncomfortable. Oh, you're not going to do crew. I thought you, okay. All right. You're just going to sit around home and play with your friends. Okay. All right. You're freshman. Okay. Let's go with this. So it can be hard, but we're giving them the skills so they learn how to make decisions on their own as teenagers in a low risk environment. And that's what I think we kind of forget as moms, is that when they're teenagers in our home, it's very low risk whether they take algebra in 8th grade or whether they take algebra 1 in 9th grade. You know, I mean, it is. It's a low risk environment. In this area, you're going to feel the pressure for academics a lot more, let me tell you. But resist and take breaths and just go, they're learning in some of the best schools in the country, and they're going to be fine. So let them make those decisions. And then this is my favorite. Season 4 is a season of friendship. I am so looking forward to this season. That's when you can be friends with your kids. Isn't that going to be great? You don't get to be friends with them now. That's okay. You don't really want to be friends with a 3-year-old. You know, I mean, you really don't. But when they're going off to college, I see this transition with my 19-year-old college freshman. You know, I'm like, yeah, she's moving gradually. She still needs me to be mom mentor. But we're moving more toward that friendship kind of thing. And I can just see how sweet it's going to be because I did all the hard work when they were younger. And so think of it that way. Look to the future. Think, I'm doing this with my toddler so that I can be friends when they're in their 20s and beyond. Because you're going to be friends with your kids a lot more than you're raising them in your house right now. A lot more, right? Because you want them to be around for a long time to give you those cute grandkids that we're all looking forward to. So my key point number 2 is about the dangers of enabling. So now that you know the seasons, the dangers of enabling, it's like the the silver bullet that's going to kill your child's self-reliance and responsibilities when you are an enabler. Now, that's kind of a counseling term. You probably heard it thing. But after we talk about the seasons of parenting, we're going to talk about love and leadership. And love and leadership go together. Some people think that telling your kid what to do means you don't love them. But being like we talked about before, they're going to fill that leadership void in your home if you don't take it. So really, you're loving your child by being their leader. And enabling is whenever you do something for your child that your child is perfectly capable of doing for themselves. Right? Now, this doesn't mean your child's going to do it perfectly. This doesn't mean that your child's going to do it the way you would do it. This doesn't mean that the child is actually going to be able to finish the whole thing, accomplish it. For example, your preschooler gets his shoes. He might get one on, and then he's stuck, you know, because he can't undo those laces to do it. Well, you let him struggle for a little bit to try to see if he can get the two on. Enabling is always getting his shoes and putting them on because it's more expedient for you. And I'm saying this as a mom. I know you have to plan a little more to allow your kids to do things for themselves. And what we forget is the cost of enabling to the child. We look at it in terms of convenience for us, and it's easier and it's quicker. But the cost to the child is that you're subconsciously telling them, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do this, you can't do that. Mom has to do this, this, this. Now, kids are lazy, and they're going to be perfectly fine with you doing everything for them. I mean, you know, we all want a slave to wait on us hand and foot, don't we? Am I the only one who wants someone like that in my home to do everything for me? I don't have to lift a finger. Of course, they love it. And they protest, I can't do it. If I heard that once, I heard it like 5,000 times a day in my home. But I can't do it. Yes, you can. You know, they can. Just telling them you can. And sometimes you have to walk away because I can't take the whining. That's me. I'm like, yeah, you do it. I'll be back to check on you. But the enabling cost to the child really is letting them not develop into a self-reliant and responsible child. Because they feel inadequate. They feel helpless if we're always stepping in and doing it for them. And we don't allow them to develop their problem-solving skills, their competency skills, all these things that help them to be successful adults. We crush, not because we don't love them, but because we do and we don't want to see them in pain, frustrated, or because we have an agenda and we've got to get it done. And I was that mom. I was like, okay, I got to get all these things done. And I'm like, wait a minute. I need to start getting out the door 15 minutes before I actually need to leave, which means that I don't get XYZ done because I have to chivvy my kids along. Okay, get your shoes. Get your shoes. Your shoes. For four kids was always fun. Enabling also lowers their academic performance. Some of you are having your kids in school now. You know, their teachers aren't doing stuff for them. They don't have time. Not if, especially if your kids are in the public school, there's 25 kids in the class. And with COVID, they're not touching your kids as much as they used to. They're not helping with that. So your kids need to learn how to do these things by themselves. So, now, to break the enabling cycle, I think you know what I'm going to say. Stop doing stuff for your kids that they can do. And that's hard because it's a habit. And like I said before, our kids are lazy. They are going to protest. If you have a kindergartner, for example, and you have done almost everything for them, and suddenly you're like, okay, wake up call, I'm done. They are not going to go quietly into that. They're going to protest. And so you just need to be prepared for that. Just go, okay, I'm going to tell my, start with one thing. If you always got your child's backpack ready, for example, got it off the hook, brought it to the front door. You know, you say, okay, this week we're going to work on this one thing. Go get the backpack. You know, you're going to have to tell them. And what if they don't get the backpack and it's time for the school bus? What are you going to do? Anyone have an answer? What are you going to do if they don't get the backpack and it's time for the school bus? No backpack. Yeah. Because really, what's in the backpack that they absolutely need? They all get free lunch at school. I know this for a fact. My teenage boys go through the line twice. Shh, don't tell anyone. Because they're not checked. Yeah. They don't have their backpack for the day. Is it going to hurt them at school? I mean, really? Is it? Yes? No? No. Are they going to be upset? Yes. Is that going to hurt them? No. Being upset and learning to recover from frustration is a skill, a life skill. Because how many of you sit down and throw a fit if you forgot something? Do we? No. We learn to compensate, right? We learn to kind of roll with it. That's just part of life. So we are doing these things because we want to be the leaders in our home and provide that leadership for our children so that they are not in charge. And this also gives children a sense of security. When they know who's in charge, they don't have to step up. And you may be thinking, well, yeah, but they kind of like it. Well, yeah, they like. I'm not saying you can't give your kids choices, but I'm saying that you really have to be the leader and make those hard choices. So when the kid forgets the backpack, you don't run it to school. You know, my kids have forgotten things. My kid forgot a school project one time, even though he was clearly reminded the night before by his lovely mother to put it in a place where he would not forget it. Did I bring it to school for him? No. Did he bring it the next day? Yes. Has he forgotten his school project since then? No. He remembers how that feels. And this is good because we want our kids to develop that internal motivation that we can't develop for them. We can't. You can't make a kid do something, but you can make them feel a little uncomfortable so that maybe they remember next time and then they'll do it. So now let's talk about some practical ways to teach your kids to be self-reliant and therefore responsible. Right, you want some practical tips, I got them for you. We're going to focus on self-confidence, not self-esteem. Because when a kid is self-confident, they feel like they can do things rather than just feeling good about themselves. You can have a kid with high self-esteem who falls apart if you tell him to tie his shoes. What you want is a self-confident child who will work on tying his shoes, who will be motivated to do that. And how do you do that, though? How do you not do self-esteem, but you do self-confidence? Well, you don't enable. You let your kids do the things for themselves. And you also let your kids fail. And that's a hard one, too. You let your kids fail. And this is one of those things where I usually get kind of panicked looks from moms when I say that. But when your kids are young, the stakes are like minuscule for them to fail, right? They're in preschool. They are not going to get a bad grade on their academic record forever because they didn't turn in XYZ they were supposed to do at home, or they ripped the paper apart because they were mad. Had that happen many times in my home. One child with an anger problem. So they brought in either the two halves of the paper or nothing at all. And they learn how to navigate another adult's disappointment or talking to them, saying, well, why didn't you turn this in when they got in elementary school and things like that? Because the stakes are so low to fail in that. And if they don't fail, they don't really learn what they're capable of because they're not going to win every time. They're not. Somebody has, on sports are a great example. Somebody always loses. And that's okay. And sometimes your kid is going to be on a team that wins. And sometimes they're going to be a team that wins some, loses some. And so learning how to navigate both sides of it, being a good winner and a good loser, is great for our kids. I will share one story. When my oldest was in fourth grade, many moons ago, the teacher, maybe it was my second daughter, I don't know, they all blur together after a while, had kids back to back in school, so I'm never quite sure which one I'm talking about. One of my daughters, though, I know that. Her back to school night, the teacher is up there, fourth grade, and she's doing this exercise that she did with the kids, and she wanted the parents to participate. And she says, "Okay, so we're going to play just like me." So she would say, "I have a child in fourth grade," and you guys say, "Just like me," and stand up. So she did this a few times. So she goes, and then she said, "I help my child with my homework." Every single parent stood up and said, "Just like me," except for my husband and I. And the whole class, I mean, the class was packed. And we're looking at each other and we're like, "Oh, well, guess we're not with the majority here." I mean, literally everyone's looking at us because we're the slacker parents sitting down saying, we might as well shouted it over the intercom system, "We do not help our fourth grader with her homework." Oh my goodness. Why do you think we didn't help our fourth grader with her homework? Anyone want to guess? She was capable of doing it herself. Number two, I'm not in fourth grade. I don't need to know fourth grade stuff. I've already been through fourth grade. Love Virginia history in fourth grade. That was my favorite. They always tell me, "Mom, stop talking about how much you love Virginia history in fourth grade." And what happens if she didn't do her homework in fourth grade? Anyone want to guess? What happened? Not much. Her teacher, what? Yeah. It was kind of optional then, but what was going to happen? Her teacher was going to say, "You didn't do your homework." She was going to have an answer for her. Either turn it in tomorrow or they just ignored it. I'm like, if the teacher wants to assign it, then the teacher can follow up on it. But I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to sit down beside my child and have a nightly homework session. Not with four kids. Not with one kid. And do you think that taught them how to do homework or how to be slackers? How to do homework. Because we told the teachers, if they're not doing homework, you let us know, and then it'll become our problem. And my kids knew that if it became mom's problem, they were not going to like it. Because it'd be more than homework that was going to be coming their way. And they learned that because when they were younger, I wanted them to be self-confident. And so I taught them how to do things themselves. No, I taught them how to do homework. I didn't totally throw them under the bus. I wasn't totally, mean mom here, didn't want to do it. We had conversations when they were in first, kindergarten, first grade, before they could read. We talked about their homework. We talked about, when do they want to do their homework? How it was their responsibility to do it and help them with it. By second grade, if they were reading well, we let them. Let me tell you, there was one math worksheet in second grade that all four of my kids, and I still don't know how to do it. It was like tears. The kids are like, "I don't understand." I'm like, "I don't either." They got it. They did have, they could ask, as long as phone a friend from the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire game show way back when, where you could they can phone mom once a week. They could have one homework question a week. So they had to think carefully. What was it going to be? Do they want to squander it on something they could figure out for themselves? Or do they want to save it for this killer math sheet? And then mom had to go, "Oh, I don't know, sorry." I never did figure out how that went. It was deadly. So that was developed. But do you think they were pretty confident in their schoolwork or not confident? They were pretty confident in their schoolwork. Because I showed them by giving them their homework to do by themselves that I believed that they could do it. That they did not need mom's help to do something that their teacher taught them in class. I did have one other homework rule. If they asked me a question and I started to explain it, if they said, "That's not how my teacher told me," we were done. I said, "Well, then you can ask your teacher because you wanted my help. I can help you, but I am not your teacher and I did not hear that and I am not going to argue with you about this. So if that's, go ask your teacher." Okay, so let's talk about the second way that you can help them. So you're going to help them you're going to focus on self-confidence by letting them do the things that they want to do, even when it's painful for you as a mom And let me tell you, sometimes you get that. We felt a lot of judgment rolling off all those other fourth grader moms and dads. But we were like, no, we're right. This is good for our child. Because fourth grade, not learning to do their homework or messing up on their homework was very low stakes. And I didn't want to be sitting down with my freshman in high school and having arguments with my teenager about homework. I'd rather let them master the ability that that was their domain and get that ingrained in elementary school. So when they got older, I don't have to worry about it. I mean, I check in with them, not that I'm just like, I'm like, are you doing your homework? Because remember, if you don't, I'll have to get involved. Be deliberate with your praise. Overpraising our kids can make them not want to try things if we're not careful. If we're always telling our child, good job, great, great, on everything that they do, some kids, not all the kids, but you don't know what kind of kid you have until it happens. Some kids are going to feel like they don't want to do anything unless they can do it perfectly. And we want our kids to have messy lives. We want them to make messes. We want them to learn how to fail and try again. Fail and try again. That's why I think musical instruments, learning a musical instrument, is a great thing for a kid. We made all our kids take piano lessons, at least through the eighth grade. I told them they will thank me later. How many of you took piano lessons? Did you want to quit? Anyone want, yeah? Or were you mad that you quit? Most people say, yes, I wish I would have kept taking piano lessons. I tell them it's a gift for them. But piano is a great example of they have to practice. They can't just play it one time. It's not going to be perfect. And it's a good because sometimes some of those pieces are, and it's trying to figure out, when you introduce flats and sharps in there, they're all over the place. So the praise part of it comes with every time my child played something, I wasn't like, that's a great, you know, keep going. Because frankly, most of the time it was like, where are my earplugs? Because this, I don't think I can hear Jingle Bells one more time when they're hitting that wrong note constantly. You know how it is. They don't hit the right note and they keep hitting the wrong one. And you're like, please just read the music. So be deliberate with your praise. Our kids need praise, but we need to be deliberate with it. And by that I mean, stick to the point. Do you feel good when someone just says to you, good job? You spent this whole time putting together this elaborate table centerpiece and they just say, good job. Or do you feel better when they say, you know, I had no idea you could turn ferns into frogs in your centerpiece or whatever you did. I don't do flowers. I don't know. Which one do you feel better at? Which one do you feel like you feel seen and heard? Is it the good generic good job or is it the specific praise? Specific, right? Yeah, you feel like, and our kids are the same way. We don't want to toss up a great job all the time. Our kids need to know, why did we think that was a good job? I remember when my kids learned to tie their shoes for the first time, I had an internal little happy dance. I was like, yes, you know, but I said to them, I said, you worked really hard on that. You know, you worked for several weeks trying to master the bunny ears and the tying together. I said, so, you know, that this was a great accomplishment. So we had more of a conversation. I could have just said, great job. But I wanted them to know I saw their hard work on this. And that's why we need to be specific. We can say good job every once in a while, but we should really make sure that we're telling our kids that we see their struggle and we see their effort into it as well. And praise the present. And by this I mean, don't talk in terms of always or never. So don't tell your kids you always do such a nice job. You know, make it, you did a good job today cleaning your room. I appreciate that. Because, or you never do this. We should not use always and never with our kids. Their lives are too short right now for them to have you always do this or you never do that. Try to be very specific in it. Anchor it in the present, and it shows the child is his current effort that's being complimented, not his general achievement. To keep it current. And be sparing but not a miser with your praise. They don't need a lot of praise. Kids don't. And if your kid is constantly asking you, Mom, Mom, did I do, you know, Mom, how did I do? How did I do? Are those kind of questions? You've probably been praising your kid too much because they need that constant affirmation to make themselves feel like they've accomplished something. So when they, just like if you give your kids too much attention, they're like glued to your hip. You ever made that mistake? I've made that mistake. The kid is like, I'm like, oh, I've been paying too much attention to you. You need to take your little legs off my, you know, sometimes it's like trying to get an octopus off, but work at it. You can do it. You know, go play by yourself. And they're like right back, it's like a little magnet. Praise is the same way. Sometimes they're like constantly, if your kid is constantly fishing for compliments and you know it, they're like, they keep asking you, did I do okay? Mom, look at this, look at this, look at this, look at this. Sometimes that's okay. If they're going off the high dive at the pool, yeah, you may want to look at them as they take that plunge. But most of the time it's because we've probably been telling them too much how great they are. And praise something that's worth complimenting. You know, and I'm as guilty as anyone to say great job, but I've learned, and this is especially good when your kids get to be teenagers, so practice it while they're young, is that you want to make sure that you're complimenting them on something that is complimentary worthy. Not everything your child does needs to be told great job. I mean, do you get told to be great job every time you unload the dishwasher? Great job, Mom. Well, how about every meal you cook? That was a great meal, Mom. No, we don't. And so we shouldn't train our children to expect constant praise for the mundane things that they do. Now, my kids have chores. They have a lot of chores. I'm a big fan of chores. Do I compliment my child every time they do their chores? No. But I do strategically compliment them every once in a while out of the blue that I notice that they did their chore. Like one of my sons has to clean the cat boxes. We have three cats. That's four boxes. And they have to do it every day because three cats can get a little smelly. And it's not a great job, you know. Now the youngest has to do it. Everyone had to do it. Now it's his turn. He's like, I'm 13, Mom. I'm like, yes, I know. I've got years to go. He's a little disappointed that our foster son is only four and not capable of cleaning out the cat boxes. Because he did say to me, he goes like, Mom, why couldn't you got an older kid? But every once in a while, I noticed that he did a really good job. And I'll just say to him, I said, Silas, I said, you know, thank you for cleaning out the cat boxes. You did a great job today. Or I might just say, thank you for cleaning the cat boxes. I know it's a job that's a little messy, but I really appreciate that. Those kind of things are the kind of things that your kid is going to remember instead of telling them every day, hey, good job on the cat boxes. Oversaturation means that you kind of dilute it. So be a little more specific and a little more think about why you're telling them. And then third, I have two more. Third, develop a parental vision for your kids. We talked about this a little bit in the friendship, season of friendship that we're eyeing. We're like, okay, season of friendship. Parental vision is, if you leave with nothing else today, this is what I hope you leave with. I hope that you think about your kids and develop some sort of parental vision for them. And by this, I mean, when you're an effective leader, and we all want to be effective leaders in our home, we want to know where we're going with our children. And it's not just to bed tonight, which is sometimes was my daily goal. How soon? How soon? Oh, how soon is bedtime coming? It keeps us from being derailed by setbacks that we have a vision. So I want you to think about what kind of adult you want sitting around your table at Thanksgiving. What kind of adult do you want your little baby, a lot of little babies here, or your toddler, or your preschooler, or your elementary school kid, however old your kids are, what kind of adult do you want sitting around your table? Now, does anyone want to share what kind of adult do you want? I'll start. I want a kind, hardworking adult sitting around my table. So kindness was a big thing in our home. All right, anyone else want to share? Self-supporting, that's a great one. Anyone else? Pleasant. That's a nice one as well. Do any of you want to have a graduate from the top of those college or high school class? I mean, is that like your number one goal? No. What about where they go to school, in an Ivy League school? Is that really what you want sitting on your table? I mean, it wouldn't be bad, but is that your number one goal for your kid? Play a professional sport? Have a fancy house or a high-paying job? Those are not what we really, I mean, if our kid gets it, great, but is that really what we think about? We want characteristics, right? Self-supporting, pleasant, I said kind, hardworking. That's the kind of person I want to be a friend with. You know, I don't want to be if they happen to get those other things, sure, but that's not what I'm aiming for when raising my children. So write down the characteristics you want your child to be as an adult. Because, and then tape it to your bathroom mirror or on your phone notes or wherever you see it. And then when it gets hard, when you think they're never going to learn to get their shoes on, I need to do it for them, you're going to stop and you're going to say, no, I want a self-supporting, self-sufficient child. So I'm going to let them struggle a little bit more with this. Or when they're fighting again, as children want to fight with their siblings, you think, I'm going to help them learn how to be kind to one another rather than and solve their own problems rather than always getting involved with it, because I want them to learn to be kind to those who they don't agree with, right? We could all use a little more kindness in this world, so we got to start with our own kids. So you aim for that, because that's what's going to keep you working through the hard times. And it is hard, but it's so helpful to think. I remember thinking, okay, I want my kids to be kind. All right, I'm getting to the fray again to teach them. We taught them a Bible verse, Ephesians 4:32. Be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, as God in Christ forgave you. I made them all memorize it, and I made them say it to each other when they were being unkind. They don't particularly love me for that, but it helped a lot because kindness was one of the things that I wanted my children to learn. Okay, so don't micromanage your kids. Anyone micromanage here? We all know what that means. Let's not do it with our kids. Skip it. And the other part of micromanaging is explaining yourself to your child. They don't need to know why you do everything for it. They don't. Now, a lot of kids ask why. Why do I have to clean my room? It was a favorite. Why do I have to do XYZ? And you know, you notice that the whys always come when it's something they don't want to do. Have you ever had your kids say, why are we getting ice cream? I never had my child ask us that. Why are we going to play in the park today? No. They only do that when they don't want to do that. Do what you told them to do. When you remember that, their why is easier to ignore. You can answer them sometimes, but the thing is that most kids are not going to look at you and say, gee, Mom, when you put it that way, I agree with you, and I'm going to go clean my room. Because they're kids, and their logic is totally messed up. Not until they're adults will they look at you and call you on the phone. Mom, I'm so sorry. I was a brat. Come on, have we done this? I've done this. I'm so sorry. I was a brat as a kid. How did you not kill me before I reached 10? You know, they're not going to understand. Save your breath. Because I said so is a favorite of mine. I also like trust me as a why answer, because that's basically what you're saying. You're saying, I'm the leader in the home. And I love you very much. And therefore, you have to do XYZ, even though XYZ may not make sense to them. And occasionally, when the kids are older, I would sit down in my chair of wisdom and I would say, okay, you got 3 minutes. Lay it on me. Tell me all your angst about why you think you should do X that I said no to. I'm not going to change my mind, but get it off your chest. It works like a charm. They'll just like go off on it and then they feel heard. And then you're like, okay, we're done. But don't do that all the time. For older kids, it works great. So don't micromanage your child. And a part of that is stay back, okay? Now, the temptation is, again, to do things for your kid that you can do yourself. So when you have that temptation, I would literally take a step back from my child to give myself distance so that I wouldn't rush in and do it. Because it's hard to watch a kid struggle to do something. It's hard. And it's hard when you can see their frustration building and they throw their pencil across the room because they don't like to, their multiplication tables are driving them crazy. Or they, you know, bang their hands on the piano because they can't get that one thing they're doing. Yeah, it's hard to see them do that. But they need to learn how to work through that frustration. Because they need to experience pain and discomfort in order to properly negotiate life. How many of you have had pain and discomfort in your life over the past week? Okay, right? Haven't we all had pain? How do you handle it? How did you learn to handle it? Experience. Is it better to have that experience when you're in the home surrounded by loving parents? Or do you want to wait until they're in college, far from home, and experiencing their first frustration without mom or dad stepping in right away? Although some parents are going to college with their kids. I don't understand these people. We want them to do it while they're safe with us so that we can help them learn how to navigate life's discomfort and pain. Because that's just what life is. And I want my kids to be prepared for that. So when we don't let our kids learn how to negotiate that, we enable them by doing things for them, then they reach adulthood without having really experienced that. And then, you know, just look around you. There's a lot of kids out there who can't navigate college or in young adulthood because their parents were helicopter parents and they enabled them too much. And we want our kids to be self-sufficient, right? Your parental vision, kind, self-reliant, and responsible. That's what we want for our children. So do you have any questions? Can I take a few questions? Yeah? Yep. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yes.
So one thing I struggle with is like the balance between playing with my kids and like getting things done.
Yes.
Especially now that the older one is in school, like, and one 3-year-old at home, and she wants mom to play with her all the time. And like there's a part of me that feels guilty. Like I should be, you know, I should let all the chores go to the side.
Right.
What is that?
Yeah. I'll confess, I didn't play a lot with my kids. I work from home as a writer, so I was working a lot. But, and they all wanted my, you know, they want your attention. And not that you, you know, you should get, I found timers are like my friends. I loved kitchen timers. On your phone is great, but get one of those old-fashioned kitchen timers because kids really love the ding that goes off. And I would just say, okay, you know, because part of her job as a child is to learn to play by herself and entertain herself. I mean, this is one of the, this and sleeping, going to sleep by themselves, I think are two of the greatest gifts we can give our children. We want them to be able to entertain themselves without us. But it's hard when they've had a playmate with the older sibling there all the time, and now it's just mom. So I would mark off, you know, 30 minutes in the morning, 30 minutes in the afternoon, and say, timer, I'm all yours, let's play. And then when it's not time to play, because you've played with them or read them books or stories, I used to do like books after lunch with my kids, and I would just read to them for 30, 40 minutes. Or, and then we would have afternoon swing time, which we would sit on our porch swing and we would sing songs and things like that. I mean, whatever you want to do, but I'm saying that I did have regular time with them. And then I'd say, okay, so what I'm going to go get dinner in the crock pot. What are you going to do? You know, just start, I would phrase it like that and say, okay, well, you know, you can, or if they're at a loss because she's going to be a little at sea for a while as you're training her, you can make suggestions. Well, here, you know, why don't you bring your dolly in here and feed her lunch while I get, you know, suggest things for them to do. And just expect that she's going to be whiny and needy. And you just keep saying, you'll have to repeat, no, mommy's working. Mommy's doing this. You can come and she'll be with you, play kind of with you. And that way she has that mommy time. And it'll take, some kids it takes a little while. Some kids they kind of catch on pretty quick. And that's how I would go through it. Have specific time, you know, 10 o'clock it's mommy time. Or just in the morning say, hey, get the timer. I'm all yours. We're playing. And then sometimes if she's like, well, you know, she gets really whiny and you haven't had your playtime, you can set the timer. Say when the timer goes off, then it's going to be our time. Like I said, I use timers for a lot with kids because because it's not you that's saying it, it's the timer. How can you argue with a white timer? You can't. So that's kind of how, does that help? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm happy to go around the tables too if you want. So I think you want to have time for discussion. So.